So this past week, you might have seen in the news, maybe some stories online. This past week marked the 50th anniversary of the death of Reverend Martin Luther King. And reflecting on his life, you know, I remembered a quote that I heard from Oprah Winfrey. She was at a Q&A for Wrinkle in Time, and so like an audience member asked her, you know, what's the most important quote or that you find just, that you value above all others? What's the most inspirational to you? And so her responded with this quote that's been attributed to Martin Luther King. And so that quote is, "Everyone has the power for greatness, not for fame, but greatness, because greatness is determined by service." And so when I heard this quote, it really resonated with me. You know, it really struck a chord and kind of just rattled around in my brain. I'd come back to it, and I'd think on it and ponder on it. And I was really blown away by it. And I was like, you know, that's a really, really interesting quote. So today, I want to kind of dive into, I guess, the essence of this quote, where Martin Luther King more than likely got this quote from, and that's from the Bible. So I want to talk about greatness, and more importantly, how greatness is determined by service or by serving others. And so we read about the importance today of serving others in today's reading in Philippians 2. Paul urges us to do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility, count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also the interests of others. So we understand that it's not about, you know, what's in it for me or what do I get out of this by helping somebody, right? It's how can I help someone out? How can I serve someone else to help them do good in their lives? And so this doesn't mean that we totally disregard our own well-being, but instead, we also must make others, besides ourselves, a concern in our daily lives. And in Philippians 2 alone, we see the importance of serving others that's repeated in the four examples that's given. We have four examples of servants mentioned within this chapter. The first one being Christ, and then Paul himself, and then finally with Timothy and Epaphroditus. So keeping this in mind, talking about serving and serving or achieving greatness through serving, let's look at Mark 10 and look at the account of the two disciples, James and John, when they came to Jesus for a request. And starting in verse 35, you'll see there's a similar account also in Matthew 20, where it's attributed to James and John's mother making the request. So James and John, they approach Jesus, and they say, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And Jesus said, "You know, what do you want me to do for you?" They say, "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand, one at your left, in your glory." And Jesus turned to him and said, "You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or to be baptized with baptism with which I am baptized?" They responded, "We are able." And Jesus then responded, "The cup that I drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left, it is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." And when the other 10 disciples heard this, they became very indignant at James and John. So when we read this account, a lot of times, you know, we put ourselves with the other 10, right? You know, how could they possibly ask this of Christ? You know, how could they make such a selfish request? And we might get upset that they would do this. But I think we shouldn't be so quick to wag our finger or shake our heads in disbelief. If we put ourselves in the shoes of James and John, Like, this is something they would have dreamed about. This would have been something that they looked forward to their entire lives, a coming of the King of Israel who had established God's kingdom and ruled the world. And if we're being truthful with ourselves, we're very much like James and John. We have the same desires that they do. It's human nature. And it's its own nature that we have that desires attention. It wants recognition or the feeling of being important. And it's the thing that drives us a lot through life. As a baby, we would cry to get attention. And throughout our childhood, you know, we become driven with gaining favor from our parents. We know we want the report card on the refrigerator or the picture that we drew. We want to be praised for our deeds. And it doesn't stop at childhood. Even as adults, we love to be praised. We like recognition at work. We like getting Employee of the Month or, you know, maybe an award, being recognized by the community in which we live for doing something good. You know, it just feels good to be praised and recognized. And I don't think I've ever seen somebody get upset for being praised. I've seen other people, even myself, get upset that other people are getting praise instead of me. And you know, as humans, we like to feel important. We want to know that we matter. And you know, if you're still questioning, saying like, I don't think that's true, there's an entire industry that's basically created on this desire to feel wanted or feel important. Advertising. You know, you hear. You see ads or commercials, you know, you're not a real man unless you wear this cologne. If in order for you to be loved, you have to wear this type of makeup or wear these types of clothes. If you want to be somebody, then you have to drive this car. And if we buy into this, what they're selling, and it's easy to do, it's easy to fall into this pattern and believe what they're telling us is true. We start consuming these goods and, you know, it can lead to us living beyond our means. You know, I'm sure there's people that drive a specific car because of the status symbol that it gives them, even though they can't make other bills. They can't pay the other bills, but they have that car, and that's what's important. And it's very easy to let this instinct overtake us because we want to keep up with everybody else. Might see a friend who has a new phone or a neighbor who has a new car or doing additions to the house. And we feel like we should be doing the same. We need to keep, you know, one step ahead of everybody else. And this instinct, it can be very destructive. Now, I'm sure we've all experienced somebody where all they do is talk about themselves or who they know. And, you know, a boaster. And they just boast about their lives. And they keep going on. And they gloat. And I mean, if you talk to me long enough, I'll tell you about like a TV show I used to produce in the 90s, a terrible TV show, awful. But more than likely, I'll probably, you know, try to impress you by saying, oh yeah, you know, I did this thing way back when. And for what, you know, who cares? What does it matter? I guess the point I'm trying to make is that it's not a healthy instinct to leave unharnessed or to be placed in check or not be placed in check. You know, it could drive us to lie about things to ourselves and to others just to make us feel that much more important or to make us feel more important than somebody else. It's an instinct that leads to us pushing others down while trying to push ourselves up. And this is not what God intended for us. So we look back at this account in Mark 10 and we see how Jesus deals with James and John. And you'll notice he doesn't condemn them. He doesn't doubt their sincerity. And you might have thought he might have said, you know, you both are out of place. This is not right. You're selfish men. You know, why would you ask such a question of me? But that's not what he did. He did something different. And Jesus recognized this instinct that they had, right? And just kind of paraphrasing, he's saying, okay, I see what you want. You want to be first. You want to be significant. Well, you should be. If you're going to be my disciple, you must be. But he reorders the priorities here. You know, don't give up that instinct. It's a good instinct to have if you use it right. You know, keep that feeling, the want and the need to be important. And have that feeling of wanting to be first and wanting to lead. But be first in love. Be first in generosity. Be first in moral excellence. And be first in serving others. That is what I want you to do. And the best part of this whole interaction is Jesus redefining what greatness is, right? Talks to the other disciples and says, you know that those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. But he tells them, this shall not be among you. Whoever should be great among you will be your servant. And whoever would be first among you must be a slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. And we see this again repeated in the Last Supper when he's having Passover with the disciples. They start arguing about, you know, who's the greatest. And repeats very much the same thing. The kings and Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors, but not so with you. Rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest, and the leader as one who serves. For who is the greater, one who reclines at the table or one who serves? Is it not the one that who reclines at the table? But I am among you as the one who serves. So in order to be the greatest among them all, you must be a servant or a slave to all. And Jesus, he always represented this. You know, in John 13, we have the account of him washing their feet before the Passover feast. And even after his resurrection, when they're out fishing, he tells them to put their nets in the water. They bring in the fish and they come to shore. He has a meal prepared for them, right? He's got fish and bread for them. And he's always serving others, making sure that their needs are met before his. And that's a true example of what type of servants we should be. And what's so awesome about this redefining of greatness is that it's achievable by anyone. Anyone can serve. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. You don't have to go through a 12-week program. You don't have to have a degree to serve. Anyone has this ability. Every man, every woman, every child, they have the ability to serve. And that's what we should strive to do. Serve one another just as Jesus did. And it is his example that we must always have in our minds and in our thoughts. And there's nothing wrong with the desire or instinct to be great as long as we seek the right kind of greatness. That we don't decide what that greatness is, but God does. And that we must be willing to pay the price of this greatness. And so if it's this greatness that we desire, then we must strive to serve, and we must ask ourselves, am I serving on a daily basis? What am I doing to meet this definition of greatness? How can I do this? And we know that, you know, we ought to be living sacrifices for everyone to see. You know, we need to stop the world around us from squeezing us into what it wants us to be, but let God transform us into who he wants us to be. And we can do this by acting as servants of God to those around us. And in the end, if we're thinking about it, how do you want to be remembered? What would you like to be said at your funeral? You know, what's important to you? I recall one of the more touching and heartfelt eulogies I've ever been witness to when my wife's grandfather passed away, Brother Martin Walker. We traveled to Florida for his burial and his service. And it was about a handful of us, family and friends, gathered outside. It's a really nice day. It lasted about 20 minutes, maybe longer. But my father-in-law, James, did a wonderful job of describing what was important to his father. And he spoke briefly about his history, family history, stuff like that. But more importantly, it was his faith and his belief in the kingdom to come. And I thought to myself, like, what a beautiful message that this is the emphasis of his eulogy. It wasn't about, you know, all these other things, but about his faith and his belief. And it really touched me. And you know, I just thought it was so, so beautiful, and that I would hope somebody would say the same thing about me. And so, you know, what do we want people to remember? Is it the awards or the prestigious school that we went to, the prominent career that we had? Or do we want people to remember that we tried to give our life serving others? We did our best to love our brothers and sisters. That we did our best to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, do what we could to make the world a better place. That is a good life to remember. And in order to achieve any of this, we look towards the example that was given to us, and that our focus should be on the mindset or character of Christ. And we read that in Philippians 2, in verse 7, that he emptied himself. He took the form of a servant, became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. And if we have this mindset of Christ, and we focus our lives around him, you know, if we put him at the center of it and put our focus on that example, you know, for other people, the center of their lives, it's their finances, it's fame, it's pleasure, sports, entertainment. But for us, it should be Christ. And if we adopt his mindset, we can see people as Christ did. We can view God as Christ did. And we can establish our priorities like Christ did and conduct our lives just like Christ did. So, brothers and sisters, like the disciples after the resurrection, we've been invited by our master to come and partake in a meal. Amazed that after all he went through, he is still serving us and our needs. And we remember the words he spoke: whoever feeds on my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life. And I will raise him up on that last day. For my flesh is true food, and my blood is true drink. Whoever feeds on my flesh and drinks my blood abides in me, and I in him. As the living Father sent me, I live because of the Father. So whoever feeds on me, he also will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven, not like the bread the fathers ate and died. Whoever feeds on this bread will live forever.